Blog Talk Radio.
Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the.
By the Unknown Radio Network, consisting of the very best selection of paranormal internet radio shows anywhere on the web. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Unknown Radio Network.
Radio. I'm your host, Kevin, from Unknown Paranormal. My co-host, Jody Parks, is off this evening, so we will have her back next Tuesday. But in her place is always the fun and exciting Matt Masaryk from Chicago Paranormal Research, also the host of Full Spectrum Radio on Wednesdays on this network. Matt, what's up,
yeah,
man?
Not much. Oh, and don't forget co-host of Into the Darkness on Mondays.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. You do double duty like I do. Of course, this week you're doing triple duty.
Yes, I did last night. Brittany is having fun on her little vacation thing that she has going on. So I did a special show, which, you know, how I do it on Full Spectrum, where it's anything and everything. had a solely music-based show last night where it was my host or co-host Jenny Frank, who's a local musician, great musician. I played some of the music. We had a band called The Employees, which is another Chicago band, and another one called Polarizer. They were on too, and great bands. It was a whole bunch of fun. So it was something a little bit different, all music related. It was really cool.
Hey, and you know, that's one thing about the network that, you know, not all the time will we talk paranormal. We'll throw in things. Just like on this show next week, I'm going to have Lana Starr, and she's the world champion of women of wrestling, and she also played in the Lingerie Football League, and she's been in several movies. There's a lot of things, so it's a little bit different show that we're doing on this show next week.
Sweet. And, of course, I can't co-host that one.
No, but I'll put some pictures of Lana up there. You'll probably be staring at those because she's a very beautiful woman. I was at a paranormal conference this weekend. Saw a lot of my friends and colleagues in the field. It was a great time. I actually made some new friends, which is always cool. Met one team that hasn't been in the paranormal field long, and, boy, they were stuck to me like glue all night during the investigations, learning everything. And even after the conference this week, they've been texting me and asking me questions, and that's what it's all about. I love sharing what I know at this point because we're always learning, but I shared – you know, a lot of things with them that they were like, man, that makes sense. And I'm like, well, you know, it's just my opinion, my thought process. But, hey, it's more knowledge to throw your way. So enjoyed it. Great time this weekend. And I'll get a little bit of break until next month. We're going to a 10-story tuberculosis sanatorium in Arkansas. We're going to investigate with Larry Flaxman and our past of Arkansas. And, man, the last time we went there last year, we had rocks thrown at us in the basement. Two girls got scratched. One got grabbed, and it left a handprint on her arm. So a very over 20,000 deaths in that hospital. It kind of has the feel of Waverly as far as when you walk in the door, you just feel the energy. You know the place is active when you walk in. So I'm really excited about being able to go back to that place and see what happens.
All right. I do have to say that, all right, look at it from an outsider's perspective. With what you just described, we got to be a little bit sick and twisted. Oh, I can't wait to get back. There was scratching. There was biting. There was hair pulling. It scared the crap out of me. Ooh, I can't wait.
Well, it's one of those things. I want to see if some of those events happen again, not necessarily the scratching and the grabbing, but,
yeah.
You know, if things happen, they happen. We may go there and it's totally dead, but I highly doubt that. I really haven't gone too many locations where they have let me down. So, I don't know. There's always something. There's one spirit out there that's always attracted to somebody in my group. I don't know why, but it happens just about every time. We had, even on those old public investigations, we investigated five buildings. And it was more like it wasn't really an investigation, I guess you could say, because we only had 30 minutes in each building. So basically I was just teaching the public how to investigate and whatnot. But we had activity in every building. So there you go. But, yeah, I guess I'm a little demented. I don't run away. You know, I'm one of these people that if a rock's thrown, I'm going to try to figure out how in the hell that happened. I'm not going to go, oh, my God, I got to run out of here, you know, like the show Stranded, which it cracks me up. I watch it, and it's more like a comedy to me because these people get so freaked out. They hear a bang, and they're like, I'm out of here, you know. Some of the people on that show are going, oh, hell no, I'm out.
You should have seen the text feed that it was the episode where they're up in British Columbia at that that huge, huge hotel that was shut down, and they were getting ready to go to bed, and then the light across the way turned on, and they were like, "Oh, we'll just check it out tomorrow." Like, no, I don't care if I was down on my boxers, I'd be grabbing shit and running out there. You know what? There's a mysterious light that just turned itself on out of nowhere. I'm gonna get some shut eye. No. And a bunch of other stuff throughout. If you saw the text feed between Dennis and I, there was nothing that didn't end in LOL or haha.
Exactly. You know, that's just the difference between people that have been in this field for a good while and people that they're curious about it, but everything scares the hell out of them. That's the difference right there.
The one thing, like, what you're talking about this past weekend. All right, being a Southern boy, and I know we've talked about this stuff before, my Sunday would have been one that you probably would have, you're going to give me a nice middle finger on this one. So me and one of my coworkers went up to this, it's called McMiller Sportsman's Park. So we brought his 22 AR, we brought our 12 gauges, we brought a M&P 40, and we're going to go up and, you know, just do some shooting for the afternoon. So we went through, popped off some rounds on a 22, did about 150 rounds on the shotgun on the ranges. And then when we wrapped up there, we went, had a Spotted Cow, which is a Wisconsin-based beer that they don't even sell in Illinois, so it's, you only got to drink it when you're in Wisconsin. So I had that. Then I went to Final Lock, which was a 2.5-hour drive, an hour and 40-minute drive from there, where I went to, I can't say the residence, but, you know, the place that I've been going that I said has been the most haunted place I've ever been.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was there for a few hours at night. So I got to go shooting during the day and then got to do a little investigating at night and then drove home. I got home at 3:30 in the morning and had to be up for work the next morning for yesterday.
Wow.
So my Sunday was spent at the gun range and then paranormal investigating. So that's a pretty damn good Sunday to me.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. So,
and I'm still working on that, that location. I keep telling everybody about the hospital here, about 30 minutes from my house. Right now we're getting a proposal together for the city council to talk about, and I got some more firepower going into it. I got some folks in the entertainment industry that are highly interested in using the building for shoots and films, because I didn't know this, but Texas is giving a huge tax break to films being filmed here in Texas. So I got a little extra firepower to go in to convince the city that I need to take ownership of this building. So we'll see what happens. Keep your fingers crossed.
Yeah. That's and I just got confirmation. I can't say where, but I told you about a little bit before, private residence. For Saturday night. So this Saturday night I will be helping this person who is, from what I've been told, in very, very dire need. And, you know, as we all do, private residence comes first. So,
yeah. All right. Well, tonight we have a very special guest, Brian Kano of Haunted Collector. And I'm going to read a little bit about Brian if you're not real familiar with his background. But his show is Haunted Collector. It's on Wednesdays. There's a new episode tomorrow night, so you'll have to check that out on the Sci-Fi Channel. Brian is the tech specialist. He's responsible for the it's a tongue twister. He's responsible for the tech and all the gadgets and gear. Best known for mixing old and new techniques of investigating, he often finds himself doing the physical tasks, such as crawling under houses and up in the attics. He also serves second-in-command of the team and helps manage the deployment of the crew itself. Ultimately, his goal as an investigator is to measure, quantify, and get empirical evidence to support the claims of paranormal activity reported while maintaining his skeptical edge. He first recognized his desire to explore the unknown at a young age. Growing up in Staten Island, New York, Brian often took note of abandoned buildings recessed within the woods near his home during Sunday drives with his parents. They called him, sparking his imagination, his curiosity. Alone or with friends, Brian began exploring the old and abandoned buildings despite countless rumors of what may have happened within their walls. Since then, he's been looking into the darkness, exploring the dangers that come with the decay of civilization's footprint, expanding his experiences in urban exploration to include paranormal investigation. And also, he does, Brian is a video editor and produces independent series of paranormal documentaries entitled Scared. Brian's work has been praised in several publications, including Taft Para Magazine and Haunted Times Magazine. And various episodes of Scare have won awards at several film festivals. So that's a little bit about Brian, and I believe we have him on the line. Brian, you with us?
I am here.
All right.
Hey, Brian, what's going on, man?
Good, good. Everything's going good over here. It's great to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
Hey, not a problem. So I read a little bit about you, but for the ones that don't know much about I always love talking to people that I see on television because I want to find out what's behind, in the background of them and where they are in the paranormal field. Because you don't get that a lot when you watch your shows. So talk about a little bit about how you got, curious into parapsychology and, unexplained unknown things.
Well, I feel I was always, interested in what back then was termed the occult. Now we call it the paranormal, but back then it had a little darker overtones, and anything that was unseen, anything that involved the afterlife or spirits or rituals was considered a bad thing. Now, I was raised Catholic, I'm not practicing right now, but when I was a kid, I went through my sacraments, baptism, confirmation, all of that, and I was the kid who was too afraid to do the Bloody Mary challenge in the mirror, just in case. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to stir up, and I am ill-equipped as a child to deal with it. So I kind of had this fear at a young age of all those things that were unknown. And then when I was 10 years old, a movie called Ghostbusters came out. And to a 10-year-old kid, this was the coolest thing ever. These guys running around, proton packs, capturing ghosts, saving New York City, it really resonated with me. And the reason for that is, even though it was a comedy, it showed me that, look, the paranormal, the occult, all that stuff is just part of our world. It's manageable. And because it is, it operates under a series of rules and laws of nature. And because of that, we can develop technology that can measure it, detect it, interact with it maybe, even capture it. Now, we're not at that point yet, but there were these guys there on the big screen that were using their brains and gadgets to handle this. So as a kid, I'm thinking, like, oh, wow, huh, that's something to think about. And that's something that I've always carried with me, even till today, especially with the advent of specific gear being made for paranormal investigations. Because, up until maybe 5 years ago, all the things they were using were repurposed from Home Depot or construction or other scientific endeavors. And these things weren't designed to look for paranormal activity, but now the things that are coming out are.
Yeah. I think, I was a big fan of Ghostbusters, too. If we had a way to put them in a trap,
it would make our lives a lot easier when we're helping residential cases. It's like, man, we'll just suck it in. Okay, you're gone, you know, like an exterminator. But in reality, it's a lot tougher than that.
Absolutely. I mean, the concept seems sound. I mean, again, it seems absurd to compare a Hollywood movie to actual research, and there are, you know, aged scientists out there who are like grumbling or rolling in the graves right now from me even suggesting it. But just the fact that, okay, what we're searching for, what we're all out there sitting in the dark and the cold and looking for, when you boil it down to it, it's energy. We harness energy every day. Look around you, wires and batteries and whatnot. We've controlled and harnessed this to the point where it's at our beck and call. You would think that the same concept could be applied to spirits. Now, you could even argue on a philosophical treatise that right now our bodies are batteries harnessing this energy that is our soul or spirit or what have you. You know, like, or I don't want to go down that road. But you could say that, like, we've already done that. We've already trapped that energy. How can we do it again? How can we do it on a more practical level? And who knows, maybe in 50 years, someone might invent something that can do that.
Yeah, you know, it came up a question one time on a discussion we had on one of our shows. You know, of course, in the science world, it's probably, I can't say impossible because everything's possible in science. But, you know, if it's energy that these spirits have, if there was a way to remove that energy or drive that energy out, which there are ways, but you know what I'm saying. If there was some kind of device you could use to just drive everything that's not part of the environment out, it would be a lot easier. But, you know, that's thinking out there, just like, you know, Star Trek, Star Wars, that kind of thing. But, you know, it's a thought.
It's funny you mentioned Star Trek. There's on Star Trek, I'm a big sci-fi fan, and I know, like, on the show, they reference a lot of scientists and a lot of things that they give homage to, theories and whatnot. And there's something on the ship called the Heisenberg compensators, right, for their warp drive or something. And actually, Heisenberg postulated that, okay, there's the Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, that on a molecular level, when you're examining something on such a microscopic level, like we're talking like atoms and subparticles of atoms, the fact that you're observing them, whatever you're using to observe that, whether it be a laser or whatnot, that's altering its space. You're not going to get a clear measurement. Like, if you know where the particle is, you're not going to know it's the frequency that it's resonating at. If you block down the frequency, you're not going to be able to find out where the particle is spatially accurate. And I always found this interesting, seeing as how, okay, we're all trying to find out, all right, you go into a house, it's haunted. Why? Because there's a spirit in there. All right, let's talk to it. And we're trying to lock down where it is, you know, quotes. And a lot of times we look at hauntings, unfortunately, from a very Hollywood perspective. Oh, there's a spirit that's trapped in this room. And you kind of just assume that because it's trapped, it has to be in a room or in a specific location and has to say the same thing every time. And I kind of find that, yeah, almost like the uncertainty principle, we can know A, but that messes up B. Okay, we can know B, but then we have to release our hold of A. And we need a Heisenberg compensator of our own if we're to move forward. Because we can get EVPs, that's great, but then what does that mean?
You know, and when you guys came out with, you know, your first, you know, the first season, I'd been in the paranormal a while, and I knew that, you know, items could hold energy, and it really brought in more once I started watching the show, learning more about that, and I even helped a client one. Well, it wasn't even, I say it's a client, but it was actually a fellow paranormal investigator. And
they were on an investigation with us, another team, and we were in a location, and they had brought a teddy bear because the, you know, one of the claims was there was a little girl in the attic, and she made the mistake when she put the teddy bear down. She told the little girl spirit, okay, this teddy bear I brought for you, it's yours. Well, then at the end of the night, I guess she didn't realize what she did, and she picked up the teddy bear and took it home with her. Well, then that night, she started seeing the little girl appearing in her kids' bedrooms and in the hallway and whatnot. And she called me freaking out, and I put two and two together, and I said, did you bring that teddy bear home? She goes, yeah. And I said, you can't do that when you tell the spirit that they can have it, you know. She's attached to it now, and now you have her in your house. So we had to remove the teddy bear, and she, you know, she left.
That's great. I think if nothing else, and that first season, we did encounter a lot of resistance from people who would say to us, oh, come on, it can't be an item. Why would it be an item? I'm thinking, like, well, that's just the most focused and most specific of your hauntings, just like it could be the land, it could be the house, it could be the person. A house is an item. Person is, you know, thing. It's energy settling on objects and things and people. So it's like, yeah, this is just the most minute. Actually, this is probably the easiest to take care of, because once you remove that item, whether it be the item itself or the item as a catalyst for the pre-existing condition, we're probably dealing with the easiest fix of them all. The hard part comes in trying to find it, identify it, and verify that that is what we're looking for. And sometimes it doesn't always work on the first try.
You know, and speaking of items, and I know I've been really quiet, haven't I? and Kevin, you know, and Brian, you know, that's just not like me. But, you know, I'm talking to the person who I was saying before has an issue for this weekend, and we're just kind of collaborating stuff right now. So, but anyway, the one, and Brian, I know you remember this, the one that I was talking to Tess about trying to get you guys in Wisconsin. So, but then there was the contract issue and blah, blah. It is what it is. But I was actually just up there this Sunday. And what I was saying about stuff that you were talking about when I made the comment of that it's kind of going to blow you away a little bit, I really, really wish that contract would have came through, because the stuff that has been coming up through renovation at that house that they're digging out of the ground, they've discovered burial plots on the property now. They've discovered just items that were submerged in walls. And ever since then, the activity has escalated so much because it's centrally located now, and this is what the crazy part is. They took all those items and they put them in one section, and there's nothing else within any of that area except for that section.
Wow.
And every single item that they've recovered so far is in one basement room, and that's solely where the activity is now. It's not out in the barn where it was. It's not out in the garage area where it was. It's not in any of the upstairs floors. It's solely in the basement now and in the mudroom off of the basement.
Right. Wow.
So, yeah, I was just up there. And I went down there, and I didn't really have a lot. I had a voice recorder with me that as soon as I turned it on, the batteries died, and I put brand new AAAs in it before I went.
Right.
I had the voice recorder on my cell phone and went through that, but the mic's just not sensitive enough on a cell phone. I mean, it is, but it isn't. So,
right.
And there's no way to load the audio file through this. It's stupid. I hate this program, but in a pinch it works. And, so going through there, as I was walking up the stairs after I was leaving the area for just a couple minutes just to get upstairs, because I was in the basement for like 35, 40 minutes by myself. And as I was walking up the stairs, I kept feeling, I was wearing boots, as we were walking around in the forest, we went shooting all day, and so I was wearing, like, basically construction boots, and I'm walking through, and I kept feeling, as I was walking, like, if you were to mess with your friend, and they were 2 stairs ahead of you, and they'd slap the back of your heel on either side of the shoe, that's exactly what I was feeling. But
wow.
And it was one step, two step, slap, next step, slap, next step, slap, one step, two step, slap, slap. So it wasn't consistent. I wasn't kicking the back of my feet. I wasn't kicking the side of my feet. I wasn't slapping my own feet, and I was the only one down there. Yeah, and then when I went back, like the way that they have everything set up in the basement of these items, is I walked down there, and I moved them just a little bit off of where they were and kind of did a half circle with them. And it was me, the homeowner, her 2 daughters, her son, her husband worked third shift, so he was at work. And all the kids were sleeping, and it was except one of her daughters. So it was me, the homeowner, and her daughter were sitting in the kitchen. I went back down there, and they all moved back to the place that they were.
Right.
So this consistently keeps getting worse.
Right, wow. It's,
so I don't do what John does. I can't, you know, I don't want to touch it. I don't want to remove it. I don't want to try and do anything with them because that's not what I focus on. That's not what I specialize in.
Right.
So.
Well, not everybody can be John Zaffis, and I think there's room in this world for really only one John Zaffis anyway. It would get a little scary otherwise.
That's what Ursula Bielski and I are dear friends, and she's really good friends with John, and she kept saying the same thing. And any time that I have an investigation, Ursula comes with, if she's not running one of her ghost tours or whatever. And that was the one thing that she said. She goes, I hope we don't encounter any items because, you know, in any of these places that we do, because I'm going to have to mark them all down, and then John's going to have to fly out here because I'm not touching these damn things.
It's funny, though, because, I mean, people send things to John. They'll just show up. But people start sending me things now, and I'm like, whoa, yeah, no, you got the wrong guy. I work with John. We're great friends, but you send the haunted items to him. I don't want any of that.
Send me a K2 or a flashlight. I don't want to.
Like, yeah, I mean, you build a new piece of tech, I'm your man. If it's a haunted doll or anything weird, it's John Zaffis.
Yeah.
And yeah, that must have been a great when you first first found out that you were going to be working with John. You know, when the Haunted Collector first started. I bet you were pretty excited about that because, you know, that guy has been around the paranormal a very long time.
It's ironic you mentioned that because I was just having a conversation with a friend about that today. And when this first came around, when Haunted Collector was first in its infancy, even before it was called Haunted Collector, I've been friends with John for years, so it was just one of those things where, you know, my buddy Chris and I would hang out at his house and we'd catch him up on what we're doing. He'd catch us up on what he's doing. He showed us the sizzle reel, and it was just, hey, you know, I'm glad my friend is finally getting on TV, finally getting the recognition he deserves. And I was like, yeah, John, that's awesome. Way to go, diggity. I didn't actually become a part of it until months later, because originally the concept was just pure family. Him, his kids, his wife. And ironically, his wife was going to be on the first episode, but the way schedules worked out, it just wasn't good. And she, you know, she's got her own life, she's got her own business, and she's like, all right, you know, John, that's you. You know, you run with that. When it's expanded, I guess I'm kind of extended family now. I'm not a Zaffis per se, and it's funny because I go to events. And people come up to me and they say, oh, your dad is so great. I love him. I'm like, boom. Not as bad. But John comes back with a joke that he's like, oh, look, hippie. Me and your mom back in the 60s, we were hippies, so you never know. And that's usually when I leave the room.
That's funny. Yeah, and... Oh, I just lost my thought process there.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh, dead air. Uh-oh. Can't have that.
That's old age catching up with me.
But actually, just speaking of Haunted Collector, tomorrow was supposed to be our mid-season finale. They originally, Sci-Fi was going to break up our season into two halves, but we just got notification today that that's not happening. You're getting Haunted Collector for the full run this time. Tomorrow's the sixth episode, and the next six will continue for the next 6 weeks. So you don't have to wait till June to see the rest of the Haunted Collector season three. And
hello?
We're ecstatic about that.
Thank God. I hate that mid-season stuff. And they,
yeah,
you know, and it's the programming, it's the network, and I know they have to do it. The editors and, you know, and Gurney and everybody, they have to do it. They always put the best at the mid-season finale. And then you have to wait 6 months, 8 months, and you're sitting there, and it's like, oh, yeah, did you watch it? And you're still talking about it 3 months later. I understand the thinking behind it, but it is annoying for us. So,
yeah, well, I mean, for us,
we
finally get the ball rolling. A lot of times people don't realize that the show is back and that the show is on, and maybe around the third or fourth episode, people are like, oh, you're back? Oh, I'll start watching. Then you hit episode six, it goes away. You know, then you might not get those people back because they don't know when the show's on, when to tune in. And I feel, you know, if we've got momentum going, let's keep building that momentum. Stick with it.
Yeah, and on that, too, I mean, it's good that, especially Sci-Fi is really good at this. So is Travel Channel, of doing the marathons or mini-marathons throughout the off-season, to where they'll keep that watcher base still there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I do notice us popping up a lot on reruns and marathons on Wednesdays, and it's good that people who haven't been exposed to us can check in. I gotta say, we're experiencing a cultural schism on Wednesday nights. One of our cousin shows, Duck Dynasty, airs at the same time on another network, and I hear it's really popular, but I would love if people would DVR it, watch it later, and join us at 9 o'clock for Haunted Collector on Wednesdays. Because, yeah, we miss you guys. We want you to watch it with us.
Yeah.
That's one good thing
about
DVR.
Yeah, I DVR both shows, so you both get equal time. But I usually watch Haunted Collector before I watch Duck Dynasty.
Good man.
Now, out of all the places that you've been on with the show, well, we'll just start with this season, because it seems like this season, so far, the episodes that have aired, you guys have had some really active places that you've been. Out of the ones that have aired, what was one of your, I guess you could say favorites in a way, you know, as far as activity that you were getting with, I know one I can ask you, because the Emmett House has already aired. That was the craziest thing I've ever seen on film, the energy that was coming out of that hole.
You know, ironically, I haven't seen that episode yet. I was locked away last week in writer's jail. So I got to see it tomorrow when the repeat comes. But the Emmett House was insane. I mean, this piece of property, it wasn't so much house or hotel. It spanned the entire length of a city block for the most part. There were so many sections and subsections to it that, you know, a lot of times our process is, okay, night one, that's our baseline. You don't really see the baseline anymore. They cut that out. But we do our baseline. We go through, and typically, because baseline is just crunching numbers and getting readings, it's really only myself, Chris, Jesselyn, and Sean. But in bigger places, you know, we've got like, Amy, you're coming with us. Jay, we're activating you tonight. Even the six of us, this place was too big. we had a lot of ground to cover, and I have to say that given all the stuff that happened in there, all of it is not going to make it to the edit because it's a cant. It's a 22-minute segment, and there were some really exciting moments in there, and some of it was just kind of physical in nature where I remember Amy was on the monitors, and she radios us and says, "Hey, guys, I think there's somebody here, like not even like a spirit, but someone is in the building. I just saw someone walk by one of the cameras." So, okay, we all click into security mode. I'm like, all right, Chris and Jay, I need to secure the first floor. Jess, go check on Amy. I'm going to go over here. And we all just snapped to it. And we all ended up in one room. And it was an awkward moment for me because, I mean, I guess I was just taking charge in a security manner. And then John's standing right there next to me. I'm like, oh, all right, well, John, whatever you feel is good is best. Whatever you want, dude. that part probably won't make it to air. But another thing too, in the Emmett House, it's tough because it's like an experiment I've been wanting to do for a long time, and it's very specific, and it has to do with, you know, you always get reports at locations where there's been a fire and people perish in a fire, and I don't know, it might toe the line of provoking. But I've always wanted to, in a location that has history like that, I wanted to almost recreate a fire, fill the room with smoke, set up a fire somewhere so that, you know, if there is a spirit there that died tragically, it might get stirred up by that. And, I mean, I guess you could argue about, oh, isn't that mean to do? But, I mean, if we're here to communicate with it, at least we'd be able to put it out and say, all right, you're here, you're safe, what happened, you know, we're here to help. And that's originally why I wanted to fill the room with smoke and have all that. Obviously, for insurance purposes and the TV show, they're like, yeah, you're not lighting any fires. I didn't really get to do that part. But that was the genesis behind
it. You know, in a way, it's just like anything else that we do as far as trigger objects or even dressing up as, you know, in clothes from that period. It's the same kind of thing. It's kind of recreating the environment. You know, and that's a great point, you know, because my team, we're testing fire, but obviously we don't build a fire location. We just get one of those long open flame candles and light it in a location. So, but yeah, I mean, I would do the same thing, you know, if you were on a battlefield in Gettysburg and you recreated gunfire, you know, there's no telling what's going to happen.
Not so much a trigger object, but a trigger situation, you know, a reenactment of sorts. I think, what do they call it now? They're terminating something like a paranormal excavation, if you will. I think John Sable coined that term. Don't quote me or he'll get mad at me or something, whatever. Just kind of, you know, recreating the situations as best as possible. And then once you've got it, examine it. And then for that, you know, specifically the fire example, that takes physical elements into it. It's not even just so much putting on a costume and speaking a certain way. It's, all right, there's a fire. That's heat. So that's, you know, that's physically changing our environment. The smoke, it's physically changing our environment. And I'm going to try that again in a off-camera situation, you know, whenever I can. But I always found that pretty fascinating.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, and I've always wanted to, you know, how people always talk about they're renovating their home or they're renovating their business and all of a sudden paranormal activity cranks up. Well, I've come up with this theory that I'm going to test with my team. My tech guy has constructed a big speaker subwoofer that's going to play on a very, very low frequency, and we're basically going to go into a location and play low frequency bass and try to shake up the building just like you would if you're using power tools and hammering and you know, because they all create vibrations in that place that's being renovated. So we're going to try to recreate it by shaking the building up and see if the activity cranks up because of it.
That's a great idea. I dig that. You always hear, like, since you bring up renovations, a lot of times you get the explanations that, oh, ghosts don't like change. And I always was uncomfortable with that because it seems too generic and too almost, to say human would almost be making it a good thing. But it's just too easy. Like, oh, ghosts don't like change. Oh, do they? You know all the ghosts? You know, you took a poll and this is what they said. But I feel it comes down to, again, energy. And, you can look at some Eastern traditions like feng shui. And it's like the way a room is organized, have better flow of energy. And, you know, you could look at it at IKEA in kind of a new age, oh, this is, you know, crap. Or you can look at it as, all right, yeah, that makes sense. And when you start moving things, removing walls, moving furniture around, the flow of energy in a room, hey, maybe shook loose a pocket of energy, a.k.a. a spirit that was stuck there, whether it be residual or intelligent. And I think that the subwoofer idea is good, too, in the same respect with subwoofers.
Yeah. You know, and that's, like I told Matt many a times, if I can get a hold of this abandoned hospital and become owner of it and be able to turn it into a research center for paranormal, then I'll be able to go there anytime I want and keep doing repetitive experiments over and over again and see what kind of results. Because, you know, a lot of times it's hard because you go to a location, right, and then you're off to the next location. So you don't really get to repetitive, experiment.
There's no follow-up.
Yeah.
Hey, man, you get that place and you open up a center. I want to be a honorary professor. I'll come down there. I'll help out.
Heck yeah. And this place is 65,000 square feet, two floors, and we investigated it, and we were having objects thrown at us, doors slamming, shadow figures, you name it, EVPs. And then I found out that the city and county, their only choice is to either find a purpose for the building because they built a new hospital, or they're gonna demolish it. And it's only been closed 4 years, and you know it's not one of those hospitals or abandoned buildings that's run down, the windows are broken. No, everything's intact. It's got central air and heat, the whole nine yards. It's made of concrete. If you're on the second floor, unless both teams are right by the stairwell, you can't contaminate one another. You can't even hear each other walking.
That's great.
And so, yeah, I'm trying to get a hold of that bad boy and keep it, you know, for the purpose of anybody that wants to come and try to do some really controlled experiments, you know. So
that would be incredible. I mean, it's just as the years go by, we're losing more and more of those big institutions. And there are, a lot of times they're becoming condos. You know, places will buy them. One in particular I'm thinking of, Denver's mental asylum up in Danvers, Massachusetts. Beautiful building, Gothic architecture, Kirkbride system. It's that abandoned for many, many, many years. It was the visual inspiration for H.P. Lovecraft's Arkham Asylum. And they tore it down, I think, back in 2006. They kept the walls of the building so that it looks the same, but they gutted it, tore down all the side buildings, and they just filled the infrastructure with condos. So now you go in there, the building looks like the old Danvers, but you go inside and it's quote-unquote luxury condominiums. And from what I understand, they were shoddily and hastily put together, because I've been getting a lot of reports of people saying, oh my God, you have no idea what's going on in here. And I'm thinking, like, well, do you know what went on in there before it was gutted?
Yeah, and you know, I've even heard Linda Vista is turning some of its property into retirement homes.
Heard. Yeah. I know. I've been there. I've crawled in there before, and it's that would be a shame. It's a shame to have it as a ruin, but you know, there have been people who have been putting on events there. It's, you know, it gets a lot of TV attention. Yeah, it's a dilemma. It really is.
I don't know about you guys, but I wouldn't want to put my folks in a retirement home that's haunted like that place.
Well, and that is one thing, though, is when you get into either a private company, a county company, or something like that, they don't recognize any of that. It doesn't matter if every single major TV network and TV show has been there, and it's like, oh, we got this voice, oh, we got these objects move, oh, we got this. They don't care because it's not recognized.
Nope. Yeah. Valentine's. That's what they're
doing. So, yeah, I mean, for somebody like a city or a county or a government, they don't pay attention to that. If it would have been a assisted living housing that was county sponsored, they're going to put it there. They're not going to take in and all of us, every single person that is into the paranormal field in the country, would call them and say, "You do not want to do this. Trust me." And it's like, well, why? Well, because it's haunted. Yeah, whatever.
I think, unfortunately, when you get into that kind of arena, you almost have to dance with the devil. And, like, if it's going to be a political thing, you have to offer incentives. Like, because right now, this idea is pure. Like, hey, I want to preserve this place so people can come do research. That doesn't benefit the community at all because they're not getting dollars from it. If you can almost integrate that and say, hey, you could sponsor, you could do this, or you could call it the Longhorn Gyms Society for Paranormal Research, blah, 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 and they get a piece of it, or whatever. If you show it that it's in their interest to let you do what you want, you'll encounter a lot less resistance.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
How to do that? I'm buggered if I know.
That's it, Brian. Yeah, I know we've talked about this before, of how, you know, the whole Chicagoland area it's just so hush hush and so hard, and they sweep all the negative history under the rug. I'm sure you've heard of it, Casa Madrid, which is just outside of Chicago. That place is absolutely nuts. I mean, there's stuff that people go all the time, and there's always experiences. There's never a dull moment, whether or not who it is and what happened, and psychosis comes in to where it's them thinking that something happened because they're in a haunted place, and they manifest it, and then they feel something touch them, or what, you know, whatever, that kind of situation. But two of my great friends, David Scott and John Stevens, they have a thing on YouTube channel. It's Believe, an online paranormal experience. They did Casa Madrid just recently. And if you go on, just whenever you have time and you look it up, their Casa Madrid thing, it's crazy. I mean, they got some amazing, amazing stuff that they got on camera from there.
Cool.
So that's one place that's accepting that actually does have stuff going on, but then there's other places that are starting to catch that bug, because after Ghost Adventures was here and did Bachelor's Grove and Excalibur Nightclub. So there's a lot of people open their doors, and they're starting to catch on to, hey, we can actually make money off this when we're not open. So, yeah, they're starting to open their doors to that kind of stuff, too. So I was actually, last Wednesday, I was at Bachelor's Grove. Ursula Bielski, Mark, who we started CPR, and we went there and walked around and ended up running into half of the Chicago paranormal gamut of people that I know. It was actually, and it was on a whim. It was pretty cool. For a Wednesday afternoon, that wasn't bad.
Not bad, not bad.
Yeah, so. Frances in our chat, she put, isn't anyone concerned about previous human pollution in a location such as Ouija board, seances, that kind of thing? This could change the energy. And I believe, you know, we talked about this a little bit, Brian, on Sunday. You know, the human element, us as human beings, we can influence an environment, and especially in what our intent is on different, you know, different things that we might do as far as an investigator.
it definitely can change an environment pretty quick.
Oh, of course. I mean, it almost goes back again to the Heisenberg principle. It's like, yeah, by us observing it, we're changing it. By us going in and stirring things up. And this is, you know, you just mentioned it that, hey, locations that get attention from TV can then do this in their off times. And it's, for Haunted Collector personally, that's almost like a no-no. It's like, okay, yeah, you call us in, you want help, but then you're going to turn around and hold events. Do you want the activity quieted down or not? Because holding events is not going to do that. But for the places that are, you know, not people's homes and people aren't in danger and like, hey, there's activity there, we just want to observe it and measure it, like, that's great. Mm-hmm. I was just at a convention in Gettysburg a couple of weeks ago, and there was a couple of locations for that were hunt locations each night, and one particular location, I don't want to mention which one it was, several investigators went into it with a Ouija board. They did whatever they did, and then they come crying to me at the hotel, and they said, oh my God, you don't believe what just happened. You've got to help us. And I'm like, well, okay, just calm down. What happened? Well, we were doing the Ouija board. I'm like, oh my God, okay. And again, this is not so much a Ouija board thing because, you know, I'm not superstitiously biased against it. I think any of the tools we use, any of the contact we make is opening a door per se. But, yeah, I mean, everything you do in those locations affects it. And the next night, I was stationed at that location. And in my mind, I know, all right, the night before, someone was in here with a Ouija board up in the attic. And that night, we were doing an SD7 ghost box session. And this almost sounds crazy that I'm saying it, but, you know, you get people who come up to you and they say, oh, listen to the EVP, or we were here. The voice said, get out. And you're like, oh, of course I said get out. They always say get out. We were doing the SB7 session, and we thought we made contact with somebody. We asked, hey, what happened? What do you want us to do? And the energy in the room changed. Everything got really cold, and almost there was a static. Like, everyone's just felt it. And over the box, in a separate frequency, it said, leave now. In like two separate kind of voices merged as one, and all of us, it was almost like a shockwave that passed through all of us because we all almost felt it. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, well, yeah, those girls were up here with the Ouija board yesterday. Like, would this have happened if they weren't up here? I don't know.
Right. You know, and my opinion on all of that stuff, the Ouija board is a piece of cardboard. I mean, what's bad is you can buy it in any toy store. But I think even with a K2 or EVP recorder or anything that we use, tools that we bring in, it's basically what our intent is, and that could open the door. Now, the only difference I see in the board and, say, a K2 meter, you could set the K2 meter down or the EVP recorder down, and you're not physically touching it, so you're not putting your energy onto that piece of equipment. And the Ouija board, the only way that you can have it operate or the planchette move is you got to keep your fingers on it. So you're ultimately you're connected to that board with your energy, and that's where the difference can come in. And that's why I think now you mentioned the SB7. I have one of those too. And I love using it in investigations. I don't necessarily use it as documented proof. You know, you chalk it down as this is what happened, right? But because I have several colleagues in the field that believe that maybe possibly us as humans might be putting thoughts that come through the box, or it's two-way radio or CB or any of those type of items that might be picking up some kind of radio wave. And so I've done some experimentation with it where I've taken the human element out. And it was just on a whim. You know how you go to an investigation and during the investigation you you all of a sudden say, hey, let's try this, right, with no thought into it. And one of the guys, he reached in his pocket and grabbed a coin, and he said, call it in the air. And, of course, it's dark, so he just tossed it up. It landed. We didn't look for it at first, and we just listened to see if we could get a response, and they said, tails. So then we turned on our flashlights, walked over to the coin, and I'll be damned if it wasn't tails. Well, neither
even
one
it,
of him.
Even if it wasn't, I mean, what are the chances that it's going to spit out a relevant answer?
Right.
That's great.
And then we went a step further before we picked up the coin. We asked, what's the year on the coin? And it said 1985. And then we picked the coin up and looked. And I'll be damned if it wasn't 1985. Well, him and I did not know, because he just pulled it out of his pocket randomly, right? We didn't, you know, there's a 50-50 shot calling heads or tails. But to get the year, and him and I did not know the year, so therefore we don't know the answer. And for it to come out the spirit box, the SP7, that's phenomenal.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah,
We did an experiment a couple of years back with a few spirit boxes. Actually, we used Jack Hacks. And there's a lot of lead up to this. It's actually in our Paranormal Investigators Casebook Volume 1 DVD. But the experiment was, okay, well, like you said, there could be so many different things affecting any of the tools we use, whether it be EVPs, obelisks, spirit boxes. You know, there's always that perception that it's very difficult to separate yourself from, you know, your conscious thoughts. Like, are you molding these answers into what you want them to be? So my buddy Chris from Scared decided to just sit alone in a room with the spirit box and listen to it on headphones. He wasn't asking any questions. He wasn't speaking at all. He was just listening, and he wanted to see what was coming through. He did this several different times, and each time he felt he heard more and more. And the more he heard, he felt the answers got darker and darker. And I said, hey, well, you know, maybe that's because you're a cynical person. Maybe that's your personality coming through. Let's ask one of the other investigators to do that. All right. We got a girl from another team we were working with. She tried it. Same thing, except her answers seemed to be more positive, you know, more supportive. So I'm like, okay, that's weird. Again, that could just be their personalities. All right, let's try it this way. We sat them down in a room. They both had headphones on. And at first, we had them listening to separate spirit boxes, and they would just write down what they heard. And again, we compared the answers, and there was still that schism. And we figured, all right, let's hook them up to the same spirit box. They're going to listen on their headphones. I'm going to sit behind them. Now, they can't hear me. They can just hear the radio station scanning. I would ask questions. They don't know what questions I'm asking, so they can't anticipate the answers. Some of them were control questions like, what year is it? Who's the president? Others were specific to us, and they were personal, or the location. And every time I would ask a new question, I would signal one of the other teammates inside. He would have a flashlight. He would just kind of flash it. They would see the light, and they'd know, okay, a new question is being answered. They would draw a line. So they're like, okay. They knew when the next question arrived so that they could start jotting down the answers to the next question. I asked 10 questions. They filled up at least 5 pages each of responses. After we were finished, you know, we all gathered together in a conference room, and we're like, all right, let's go over the questions. Let's go over your answers, see if any of the answers match up. And more importantly, do any of the answers match up to any of the questions? And some of the answers, you know, literally were spot on. Some of them seemed to be delayed by maybe 3 questions. But those were always of a personal nature and would be things that weren't on the radio, you know, it were things that couldn't be on the radio. And especially when profanities come into it, you know, FCC is not letting any of that on the air. So I thought that was interesting, and we've tried that several times, almost like a blind session, and I'm looking forward to doing more of it, actually.
Wow. We've done some experimentation where a colleague of mine, he lives in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and of course we're in East Texas, so we're about 2.5 hours, and we were going to a location, and of course he didn't know anything about it. We didn't post it on Facebook. It, you know, no one knew where we were going, whatnot. And I said, hey man, I called him up that day, and I said, hey, I want you to try something. I want you to fire up your spirit box at your house and see if you can find out the state, the town, the name of the location, and the name of the team, my team members that'll be there. See if you can get those answers through the spirit box. And I left it at that. And then we went to Shreveport, Louisiana, to a location. And it was about an hour into the investigation. I started getting texts from him. And he goes, are you in Louisiana? And I said, yeah. He said, are you in Shreveport? Yeah. I mean, he got every one of them right. And he was getting it. He videoed it. He got every answer through that spirit box.
Wow.
So I thought that was, you know, that's somebody that's using the spirit box that's not even with us, but was finding out information about where we were at. And that just makes me scratch my head even more. And then another location, I was doing a live broadcast on this show. And my co-host, he was in Dallas, and we were in Arkansas, so we were a good 8 hours away from him. And we were talking on the radio, you know, on the phone and back and forth. And I said to the spirits in the building I was in, I was trying to get them to come up, set off some of the meters, right? And I said, can you light the K2 up for me? And he had just so happened turned on some of his equipment over there just for the hell of it. And when I said, can you light the K2 up for me, it lit up over at his house.
Wow. See, I've done remote EVP sessions before to try it out and see if there's any possibility with that. And that's the – it was weird because – the problem is there's no way to really record it of what I'm hearing on my end, but I've done it to where I've been on speakerphone and I've asked questions, or I've been on a place and I've had somebody on speakerphone and I've asked questions and I have the phone sitting next to the recorder, and we've actually gotten some responses that were intelligent, that were asking, or that were answering, Kevin was with Dennis, and he's in Virginia and I'm in Illinois. And they were answering his questions, and it's not like he had any clue of what was going on. He was just asking. There was no relevance to what he was asking, just general stuff to see. And he was actually getting some responses, and I've gotten a couple of responses when we've done it at locations that he's been at, too, and it seems to work. What you're talking about with the SB7s and the Shack Axe, well, I have boxes of them. And half of them are dismantled because we tried different things, and then after we tried them, because we're crossing wires, we're doing a whole bunch of stuff to them. Eventually, we just work them so much to where they break. But I have one Shack Hack that is still exactly the way it comes when you buy it. And then I have another one that we completely disconnected the antennas. So if there's anything that was to be... It's still going to hit the frequency. It's just like actually on the device itself, and this is what we were trying to figure out, if it was a close quarter FM or AM broadcast that wasn't actually coming through the radio wave, because it's the device is still going to send out the signal. It's just not going to go as far. It's only going to go locally.
Right.
So we ended up doing that to where instead of hearing those little the little things when it hits each station, because how are you going to get, if you're asking an EVP session or a spirit box session, how are you going to ask, oh, you know, did you die in 1877? And you hear this? Oh, did you hear it? It said no. No, that's not, no. Just yeah. That exactly. Is nothing. It's a blip.
Right.
Yeah. If you get, I discount single syllables. Just because
exactly.
There is a possibility of an issue with that. If it's ideally a complex sentence would be great, but the that's the one nice thing where we were getting through the we had the both SB7s running at the same time. We simultaneously set them on we started off an AM band on reverse on the 100 what is it, 100 MPS or whatever that shows up on the screen, the fastest setting in reverse. Mm-hmm. So we did that. We had them both sitting next to each other. The one is silent. All you just hear is the ticking of each, and then on the other one you can hear the blips of the radio stations coming through. Well, we were getting the same words coming out of both of them, the one that had the antennas hooked up and the one that didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But the one that didn't have the antennas hooked up was a lot clearer because there wasn't any of that staticness behind it. It was actually really cool. So we've had a bunch of, I mean, the Shack Hacks, we've done every single modification you could possibly do as far as sweep rates. We have just boxes of parts from Shack Hacks.
Nice.
I might be able to build one out of all the pieces that are left. But
a Frankenstein Shack Hack, very nice.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, and even the Ovilus, I have the Ovilus X, and, you know, a lot of times it just spits out random stuff, right? It's just randomness. It has nothing to do with where you're at or what you're asking. And then other times it seems like it's right on target, right, with what you're asking, the history of the building, you know. And I've even had the Ovilus cuss me out. That's no joke. It said the F word. It said F you, sir. It's funny. It said F you, sir. And we were talking to, because I have a psychic on the team, and the meters were going off, and the energy in the room, you can feel that gut-wrenching kind of nasty feeling you get when something negative's in the room. And, you know, we were talking to this guy that he was in the history, he had brutally raped a woman in this hotel that we were in, and he was a bellhop. And we weren't, like, in-your-face provoking. We were more like, you know, somebody that does this kind of thing to a woman, we think you're a coward for doing something like that. And the Ovilus said, right after we said that, it said, F you, sir. And I was like, wait a minute, I know that's not in the word bank.
See, that's the thing. I've concerning the Ovilus, I've spoken to Bill Chappell beforehand. I kind of almost want a printout or some way to verify what words are in that database, because obviously it's one of those things where, you know, you're sitting in a room and it's a demon. You're like, oh my God, it's a demon. It's like, well, of course, because it was programmed into it. You know, if it only has a limited word bank, the person who programmed it has to choose which words go onto that. They're going to choose, obviously, the most common ones to make communication easier. In between seasons 2 and 3, I wrote him and I said, hey, do you think maybe you can make us a custom one that has our names in it? John, Amy, Chris, Jason, Jesson, and Brian, so that if something does want to address us specifically, it has the opportunity to do so. And he said, no, because I don't want to to mess with it or make it I don't want to stack the deck in that direction. I said, oh, actually,
yeah,
I respect that. That's a good idea. You know, I was thinking for one way, but he kind of showed me a different way. But still, I want to see that word bank. Because, I mean, is the F word in there? Is, like, what's in there? It can only spit out what it knows, and it's almost like a foreigner trying to speak English and hurriedly looking through a translation dictionary and spitting out something that doesn't quite fit. It's not what it meant, but these are the only words that were available to it. So maybe it's not cursing you out. It just didn't know how to say, help, I'm here.
Yeah, he created a program for the Ovilus X, and you can actually plug your Ovilus into your laptop and pull it up, and you can see what's in the word bank. And you can actually change, you can modify your Ovilus now through that program, and you can change the word bank and modify it to whatever you want.
See, I've never gotten to do that. I'm on a Mac, so it never seems to interface with me.
Yeah.
I'm looking to
There's an app you can download that's, I think it's called Spirit Speaker or something like that. I'm looking through. I know I downloaded it. I think I still have it on my tablet, but I don't have it on my phone anymore. And what was funny is I downloaded it when we were driving to a place that we were going to check out, and I did it as kind of a joke, like for fun, like how accurate can an app that's free be? And, you know, just like, what the hell, it's good for entertainment. And what I noticed is, let's see if I can, there's an energy graph that comes across the screen that shows, it's basically a baseline. Oh, let's see if this will work. So it starts out really great. And then there's nothing going on. But then if you, like, shake it, there's it runs through the G-sensors, and when there's any movement, it says something.
Okay, right.
So, and you can see the energy graph raise up. So I just thought that was kind of funny. But, yeah. So don't really trust the app. EVP Analyzer is actually a decent one, and it's for the phone stuff. But what I was saying, when I was in the basement, and I was, after my batteries died, my recorder, and didn't have any more, so I was using my phone. The damn thing wouldn't interface with the EVP analyzer. It's like, it's an app that's on my phone and I record on my phone. Why can't you guys communicate?
Yeah.
So.
Well, see, that's the thing. Like, right now there's apps now, and I think apps are valid to try. They're as valid as any other piece of equipment we're trying. We'd never base any conclusion on it 100%, but I'm thinking, you know, if they can start interacting with our electronics this way, just text me. To say, I'm here. Bloop. This is my name. Bloop. Turn around. Get out. You know, it's like whatever.
Yeah, I like a paranormal puck for the cell phone where they can text you.
Seriously, it's like, all right, if I have to download an app that's going to make you go, just text me. It's really simple. People do it while they drive, for Christ's sake. Do it.
Yeah.
Well, funny
yeah.
You should bring that up, actually, is that, not that I've ever been texted by a spirit, but just the concept of what the new, or what's behind the touchscreen that makes it actually actively work.
Right. Right.
You know, heat, pressure, electrical signal, like, that's basically how that screen functions. And I was thinking about it, and I felt like a complete idiot. But I was doing, you know, I was sitting at a place and doing EVP session, and we were working on developing this thing called a comm box, to where it was an electro sensor that was on there that was led to light yes or no, instead of doing the flashlight or, you know, anything like that. It's if you come over and you touch it, just like a REM pod's going to go off, it'll make the light turn on. So I'm like, that's the same damn technology. It's the same technology that's in your cell phone screen. So I was thinking, I'm like, all right, I put it down. I turned the screen on. I went to text message, and I set it down. I said, you know, this is, and it was something, somebody was supposed to have died in the 80s, so they know what a keyboard is. So I'm like, all right, you see the keyboard. I'm like, you know, try and touch some of the keys. You know, just to, you know, touch letters that you're familiar with. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm like, you know, you can write me whatever you want. I'd really love to read what you have to write. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, am I literally just sitting in the dark talking to a phone asking for a typed message? Yes, I was.
You know, comedian Chris Hardwick, he had a special a couple months back, and there was a bit in it that was really funny and really relevant to what we do. And he said, you know, how come there's no new ghosts? How come, like, is the afterlife that red tapey that it takes so long for new ghosts to come? Like, every ghost we come across is from the 1800s, and it's a little girl who died. And how often do we come across this situation where we have to, you know, we're in the middle of an EVP session or we're trying to communicate, and we stumble because we're like, okay, just come here and touch the keyboard. Oh, you don't know what a keyboard is. Come here and touch the, oh, you might not know what that is. Touch the box or touch that green thing, and we sound like idiots. But it's true, you know, because you can't say come and touch the antenna to someone who's from the 1700s. They don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that's a good point. We have to gear our questions depending on where we're at and the history of the building and the claims. And, you know, I found something interesting that through some of my psychic friends and my teammates as well. We were at a location one time, and we were setting up the DVR, and we were upstairs. I was messing with a camera, and one of my teammates that's a gift, he come up there and he said, "Dude, I just get this feeling from the spirits that are here that they don't like the DVR whatsoever." And I said, "All right, well, we'll try something tonight. I'll make an announcement to the house and to the spirits that are there that we'll run the DVR for half the investigation and then we'll shut it down, you know, give their house back to them per se." Well, while I was talking and doing all this, when we got home and did the review, of course, the investigation hadn't even started, but we had EVP recorders running while we were setting up. And I get an EVP of two spirits talking to one another. The first spirit says, "Where's the camera?" The other spirit goes, "Over there." And the first spirit goes, "I'm out of here." And I'm just like, they're aware of the cameras, you know, and it makes me wonder, because a lot of times, you know, we shoot hours and hours of investigation footage, and, you know, we're all wanting that one piece of video that's just crazy, you know, you see a spirit or something happen on the screen, and I'm wondering if they can see those IR lights. And they kind of duck and dodge around those pieces of equipment.
Could be. I mean, it's one of those things the human eye can't see IR or UV, but, I mean, we don't know what the perception of that other side is. Maybe it's bathing the room with so much light, they're just like, yeah, whatever, I'm out. It could also be subjective. I mean, just like us, there's certain people who are sensitive to light, some people who can't eat this or can't handle that. Who knows? There might be some parallel in the spirit world, because we've gotten EVPs that express, I want to say displeasure, but discomfort with EMF, EM boosters. It's like, oh, it hurts us.
Yeah.
Does it? Ooh, sorry, didn't mean to do that. You know, it wasn't a conscious thing, but what are we going to do? And is that true for all spirits? Is that a rule? Or is it just that particular one?
Right.
Yeah, I've gotten ones with IR floods. Mark and I have gotten them to where it said your light is bright. And
nice.
We've gotten a bunch to where we've actually toned it down. We don't use the floods anymore. And to be honest, you really don't need that much when you're shooting. You don't have to flood it to where it looks like daytime. Really all you have to do is be able to figure out what each thing is, and we've gotten more video movement that way, just using a very, very minimal amount. But when you do your review, you do it in a darker room, so your eyes tune into the screen more, so that's what you're viewing. And then if you have any video software to where you can and just bring the light up a little bit, not, you know, superimpose an image in there or anything, but just bring the light up to, you know, to show for when you're going to show the client, be like, okay, look, if you want to go around and turn off every light in the room, be like, if you look right here and you squint, you can kind of see a figure. But that's one thing that we've gotten a lot more in-room activity on, is cutting the light down. Of IR, I should say. But, and the other thing I love about you guys, and I kudos and hats off. You guys do a lot of stuff during the day.
Thank you.
Kevin,
yeah.
Kevin, we've talked about this. Dennis and I have talked about this. It's the analogy we use. It's not like in Beetlejuice where there's a ghost waiting room and be like, damn it, I wish it was dark. I need to go haunt. I'm sick of sitting around. You know, why can't it be dark yet? You know, I can't go out when the sun's up. I mean, you know, no, that's not, I'm a ghost. I can't go out when the sun's up. No, it's not
you,
like
you,
that.
You would, you would see more of it during our first season, a lot of daytime stuff, especially now this season. There's so much going on. There's new cast members. The edit is, I mean, my hat's off to the editors for being able to cobble the stories together because there's so much going on. You don't see a lot of it this season, mainly because they've eliminated the baseline from the storyline, so you don't see us there during the day. Not to mention we filmed during the dead of winter, so there wasn't a lot of daylight, even though it was daytime. And that's one thing I always liked. And I know John and I would really fight with the producers who sometimes were like, oh, let's wait till it's dark. It's like, no, we got to go there now. Oh, but it's still daytime. Like, yeah, so? That's, you know, daytime, nighttime, it's the right time. Let's go. And for the most part, yeah. You know, they always acquiesce to that. I just wish you would see it a little more. Now, this season, I seem to only exist in night vision, so I didn't see much daytime at all.
You know, and
I guess a vampire effect.
Yeah, that's the misconception out there, especially when I have clients call me and, you know, they're like, well, do you want to come over when it's dark? And I'm like, no. I said, do you have activity happen to you during the day? And they're like, yeah, it happens all the time. And I said, yeah, they're not on a time clock. They do what they do whenever they want to do, you know, and I interviewed a woman that's in a paranormal group in Alaska, and there's times of the year where they may have an hour of darkness. And and they do investigations, you know, in the dead of the, you know, it's daylight all the time, so they can't go dark. You know, they got the sun out, but they investigate, and they have activity happen just as much as if you were doing it at nighttime.
I will say, though, that even though nighttime lights out is very much a TV thing, at the same time, there is credence to it that at 2 in the morning, it's not like there's a lot of traffic outside. It's not like there's a lot of people up. You know, we're doing our things, but during the day, the world is noisier. It's hustling and bustling, and sometimes it's harder to get that effort because of the rest of the world. And, you know, it's not like you can lean your head out the window and go, hey, guys, EVP session, could you keep it down? Stop the meeting. Stop, you know. So in that respect, nighttime is good because things are quieter. But yeah, the whole, it has to be nighttime because that's the only time ghosts show up is bunk.
Yeah. There's three ways that I describe it. Is one is you hit the nail on the head. There's less life in the middle of the night. You're not getting buses taking people to and from work. There's less cars. I mean, maybe you'll encounter once, but there's not people walking their dogs down the street. There's not birds chirping. There's not. So it cancels out a lot of that. What they do, and exactly correct, what they do is networks do it, is one, lights out in the house during the investigation for dramatic effect, and two, at night for dramatic effect. It makes for better TV. If you see people walking around, it's all sunny and nice and pretty, it's going to be like, well, I don't get that. Like, I'm not
personally, I miss being in color. I remember last season, you know, they got interview segments. I'm in color. I'm interviewing witnesses, and like, hey, I exist in color. Now I exist in shades of green, and I'm like never out in the sun. I feel like Frankenstein.
Yeah, and the other thing too that I wholeheartedly agree with, and this is something that I've thought about, and I couldn't find a reason why not. So the other thing you don't have to do is you don't have to investigate with the lights off. If you think about it in a way of like a haunted bar, for example, that has a wine cellar in the basement, when the bartender who experiences something goes down in the basement, they're not walking around in the absolute dark to go grab a bottle of wine or a bottle of liquor out of there. They have the lights on, something happens. So
absolutely.
There's two different things with that is, one, depending on how you're investigating at that point and what theory you're trying to test and come up with of what's going on, yes, light off does make a huge difference in what it does to your sensory perception of the environment. When you lose your vision, every other sense heightens. So there is an idea to that, but I, like, when I'm at a place, I do half of it lights on, half of it lights off,
And then but I'll alternate. I'll do an hour lights on, hour lights off, hour lights on, hour lights off.
It's totally nail on the head. Every investigation starts with the observer, the client, the person who reported the activity, and you know, you got to start out with a little bit of psychology, but at the same time, it's all right. This person was going about their day, their daily business. They weren't looking for ghosts. They weren't sitting in their basement with a K2 meter going, oh, I wonder what's going to happen. It's, hey, they're washing dishes. They're doing laundry. They're moving about. Ooh, something happened. So you almost have to do that exactly under those same conditions if you're even going to approach it in a scientific manner. Then after you've done that, switch it up, turn the lights out, try different, or maybe turn the lights on. I think as long as you get your baseline down and you know the parameters that you're working with. I mean, like, right, fluorescent lights, they obey the room in the EM, but you know that. So at least you can jot that down and say, okay, well, here's the range, here's the bubble of effect. All right, it was out there. There's no fluorescent lights in that room, so it couldn't have been altering her perception. Let's find out what's going on. You got to do so many things. You got to mix it up and really attack it from all different sides because unfortunately, a person's word alone is just that. That's just a tale, a relating of an experience. And ooh, you know, that's not fact. That's not even evidence. That's just, oh, that's interesting. Let's see what we can do about that.
Yeah. The other thing I agree with, too, and I don't know your standpoint on this or idea, is repetition of a location. If, in fact, you do have the, you know, spirits or people, too, if you had 5 to 6 people stomping around your house saying, hey, where are you? Come talk to me. Where are you? And they're not familiar with you at all. You're a stranger. It's either a fight or flight. So a lot of it could be where teams are going in and they're doing a little bit of provoking. It's their first time there. They really don't know what's going on. You start provoking and it's an intelligent haunt that's there. And the spirit comes back and says, get out, or F you, or, you know, whatever it may be, because they don't know who you are. You're in their space. But The one thing I've noticed that's been huge is going back 3 or 4 times, introducing yourself, not provoking right away, just being, you know, trying to establish contact like you would with a normal person. I'm not going to walk up to you or Kevin and just be like, you know, what the hell? Why won't you talk to me? You know, where are you? You're a piece of crap. What would you guys do? You hit me in the face, or, you know, you'd be like, get the hell out of my way. Get out of my face. You know, get out. What are you doing in my house?
All of this, and I tell people this at every lecture, every convention, I have to remind people and implore them, and we all know it, we sometimes forget. You know, the most important tool we can use, it's not a K2, it's not a millimeter, it's common sense. And That just seems like common sense. Of course, you know, of course that's how you can act. But we forget because so many people are like, I got to get that evidence. I'm doing this and it's important. You forget that you almost have to approach it like any situation. Illustrating what you just said, you know, you're not going to walk into a room and go, tell me your name, and, you know, like an interrogator. Sometimes it's even good to have the person who called you in, hokey as it sounds, maybe introduce you. You know, hey,
yeah.
And of course they're scared, so it might not be an easy introduction, but look, here's John and Brian. They're going to be here. They're going to try to talk to you. I'd appreciate it if you speak with them. You know, that might work, that might not, but again, usually people call you in because they're afraid and they can't, you know, they don't know what's there. So you're coming in as the savior and you want to look tough, but it doesn't always work out that way.
No, and if it is true, ghosts are people too, then you have to interact with them like a person, not like exactly like you said, like an interrogator. Because then fight or flight, most people will choose flight, and they'll back away. And hell, if it is an intelligent, not a residual haunt, and you're at a place, and they're like, well, they can't see me. I don't have to show them a damn thing. I don't have to talk to them. I'm just going to sit in the corner and watch them talk to themselves in the dark.
Yep.
You know,
absolutely.
I got a question too, because I've noticed we get most of our EVPs or any kind of activity. A lot of times when we're not even directing questions to any of the spirits in a location, we might just be sitting there, you know, because you're in a location for long hours with people, and you'll sit there and you'll start having conversations about, you know, whatever, or cutting up or doing something funny. And a lot of times it seems like that's when you get your evidence, because that's when they chime in. And I was wondering, when y'all have been on the show and doing your investigation, have there been times that you have had activity or EVPs when you weren't addressing the spirits directly?
Absolutely. I think, as with anything, there are general guidelines and general rules, and when things are exceptions to that, I mean, it's like the English language. There's basic rules, but there are so many exceptions that modify it. To say that to get repeatable EVPs, you have to do this way every time, you know, it's a good starting block. But I mean, John's always telling me, look, if there's something here, if it wants to talk to you, it most likely will right away or soon or when it feels comfortable. You know, not 3 hours from now. Like, hey, that's you know, how much coaxing can you do? It's either going to happen or it's not. On the flip side to that, you know, there is that familiarity, like, oh, all right, these guys are okay. Yeah, maybe I will come out. And sometimes we have been just talking about nothing or anything or laughing and things come through. Practical example of this, I'll take the office situation. You know, there's the break room. People are in there laughing and having a good time. You come in, you feel that energy, and you're like, oh, hey, what's going on in here? You feel welcome.
Yeah.
If just before that someone got chewed out or the boss fired somebody, you walk in, you feel as if all the energy has been sucked out of a room and you just want to quietly go in, get your coffee, and get out. And that really applies to investigations because, yeah, I mean, you have to make the trap, if you will. You know, you have to make that cheese in the trap look enticing for whatever to come out so that you can get evidence of it.
Right. And here's something I always ask people that have been on TV shows or are currently on TV shows. I ask Ben Hansen this as well for Fact or Fake. And has there been times when, because, you know, there's breaks in filming or they're setting up or whatnot. Has there been times when y'all been on location when there's not been filming going on that the crew's setting up or whatnot and something crazy happens, some kind of activity, and it freaks out the people involved? And you're like, man, I wish we had that on film.
Oh, so often. So often. Usually at the beginning of any season, most of the crew are skeptics. Like, whatever, they're Hollywood people. They come to film, they've got a job to do, they've got a show to produce after hours, they're going to go to another show. You know, they're professionals, this is what they do. But we're professionals, this is what we do. And, you know, over the course of the season, things will happen to crew members that make them go, oh, what, this is real? And we're like, yeah. You get John's office. Why? Because this guy's been doing it for 40 years. What do you expect? It's amusing to us. It actually brings us a lot of joy to mess with them after they have their realization. Furthermore, I mean, it's because it's a TV show, cameras have to stop down, they've got to change batteries, they've got to change tapes, yep. And sometimes things happen and they don't get it.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes if something happened and they don't get it, all right, we missed it. Sometimes the camera's pointed somewhere else, and when something happens to one of us and we react, they don't get it. And in cases like that, they'll turn around and be like, oh, can you say that again? And we'll say it again. And it's like, okay, you missed it, but it's legit. It's tough because, I mean, unless they find a way to hardwire our vision into a recording device that can see what we see and not just like shoulder-mounted cameras, you're never going to get everything, but, you know, they do the best job they can.
Yeah, spirits don't operate on cue.
Nope. They do not.
That's something, too, that I, you know, I'm thinking, well, John Zaffis, also known as the godfather of the paranormal, which he has to do a Marlon Brando or something, just a little quick spoofer or something every once in a while, because that's how he's been known forever. Is you got to convince him to do a little short or something you can throw on YouTube. Like, hey, you're the guy from the paranormal, and have him do like an impersonation or whatever. But that's, and playing devil's advocate when it comes to the science of paranormal, this is something that I've been talking about a lot over the, you know, the past year. The problem with approaching paranormal in a scientific manner is it's completely impossible. When you have your idea that you want to test, you have it's a theory field. It's not a scientific field, because it can't be duplicated in repetition to say that this is scientifically proven that there is the afterlife. You know, that they can interact with us. You can test theory and get ideas off of that theory that you can go off of, but yeah, you're absolutely right. You can't, that nothing happens on cue. You can't repeat it. If you get an EVP, it's like, well, what do? You sit there for days and days and months and ask the same question and hope you get the same response?
Yeah. Well, it's like this. I think you have to, it's not so much that it can't be done scientifically. I think you have to apply the scientific method during your investigations, because, again, just like interacting with people, just because they don't react the same every time doesn't mean they don't exist or that you can't interact with them because it's not scientific. The way you conduct an investigation, I always like to do three things: foundation, repetition, experimentation. Foundation, read, learn. You know, you got to get that foundation of knowledge before you can even think about helping anybody. Then on your investigation, it's about repetition. You have to do things the same time every time to even hope to get repeatable results. But, okay, well, how can you grow? Experimentation, whether it be a new device, a new method of doing things, maybe bring in a psychic, whatever you try, if it works, all right, that's part of repetition. If it doesn't, you throw it out. And it's almost like I tell this to people all the time. Okay, I'm here at a convention, I'm talking to you guys, or I'm at work, or I'm commuting somewhere. If you go to my house at 123 Main Street, I'm not there. Does that mean I don't exist? No. It just means that at that point, conditions were not right for you to verify that I live there. And I feel that's very much the same with the paranormal. Like, yeah, there's so many variables, but look into deep space. Look into the universe around us. We're just, you know, a tiny little blip in this whole big cosmos, but we're learning, you know, about colored temperature radiation. We're learning about, you know, dark matter and all this stuff that's going on in deep space that we're learning because there's information. And what I want to do scientifically with the paranormal, which I will never finish in my lifetime, is measure it to the point where, okay, well, we know that water goes from liquid to solid state at 32 degrees Fahrenheit. Why? Because we found that out. We discovered that. I want to get to a place where we go, okay, at 150 milligauss per square inch in a location, that means, you know, it's ripe for a spirit to manifest or something of that type. You know, there's got to be rules to the universe, and they are. We don't have those numbers. We don't have that data.
I agree with that for sure. I mean, I'm just saying, like, for somebody to go out and say that this was 100% scientific, it's like, well, it falls more into theory with scientific practice, not, you know, it was deduced by science. This is in a nutshell is what I was trying to say.
Now we're talking semantics.
You know, that's one thing I had a harebrained idea a couple of weeks ago, and I was talking to one of my buddies. One of my buddies that makes equipment, and, you know, and I told him, I said, you know, if there was a device, you know how every one of us can be hypersensitive or not sensitive to EMF fields, that are in every home, you know, and depending on the home, some homes, I've come across a 100-year-old home, but the wiring was so bad that you couldn't even use the EMF meter because it would just peg out on every device we used. But if there is a way to take have a piece of equipment that, of course, it probably could hurt them, I don't know, but if you could say, okay, I'm going to pulse out this EMF field to you, and I'm going to keep measuring it, you know, and watch the levels go up to the point where you feel it affecting you, right? Maybe getting you kind of nauseated or whatever. Well, we find that threshold on that person that lives in that house, this is the level of EMF that affects them, and then go test their house and see indeed if there are levels in that home where they're claiming there's activity where it is hitting that threshold that affects them, you know?
Right.
That would be cool, but at the same time, I don't know how well it would be great pumping EMF at a person, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think they've done that with that, it's funny I say that. A couple of years ago, there was a thing going around, they nicknamed the God Helmet, and they're strapping it to people's heads and bombarding you with EMF to see what would happen. And
yeah.
Like, what do you think is going to happen? Like, dummy. There are EMF detectors to prevent that from happening in your home. We don't want that.
Yeah.
Drop some acid while you're at it and see what happens. Not that I can do that.
And just since you brought up EMF in the home, or just natural EMF in the home, I grabbed my Lutron EMF detector, the digital one, and I have it sitting on the stand right next to my alarm clock that's, I'd say probably, I don't know, 2 feet from my head. It's reading a 41.2 milligauss right now, and it's 8 inches away from the detector, and it's 41 milligauss. So little things that people don't think about that give off high EMFs. My laptop that's sitting right in front of me right now is giving off a 9.4 while it's running.
That makes sense. That's something you expect. Like, oh, okay, of course, it's a computer. My old alarm clock give off ridiculous EMF, and that's right next to my bed, right by my head where I sleep. So, like, what's that doing to me? What's that? Is that causing me to dream? Is that causing, you know, horrible dreams I have all the time? Like, this is the things we got to take into account, especially when we're looking into those reports of people saying this happens, that happens, that happens. Well, look at those practical reasons first.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm talking about. The answer is, especially if you're doing a private residence, and it's like, okay, well, if the homeowner does have a hypersensitivity and the alarm clock, like the one that's sitting next to me, is giving off a 41.2, something you got to take into account is like, hey, well, you know, maybe they are sensitive to it, and maybe that's, you know, causing hallucinations, skin irritation, scratches, restless sleep. So, when you brought up the home thing, it popped in my head because I did test it when I got that meter. Because I tested when I got the K2 with that clock, and it typed the K2. So I tested it with the other one when I got it to get an actual reading, and it's always in the 40s. And, yeah, you don't think about it because it's an alarm clock. You think about it when you slap it to shut the hell up at night or in the morning because you don't want to go to work and you hit the snooze. But then after that, when you're at work, you're not thinking, oh, God, I had the worst nightmares last night. I don't know why I had these nightmares. Well, maybe you have a sensitivity, and maybe that's the reason is because it's, you know, it's the alarm clock that's sitting next to your head.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Now, one thing before we get off the show here in a little bit, but, you know, people always don't realize, especially in the general public, that this is a field that we're always learning things. And I wanted to ask you, because you're around John, who's been in the field, 40 years. Has there been times when y'all have been at a location where even John is like, oh, my God, how did that happen? Or, you know, he's scratching his head, you know, because this man has been in the field so long, and I'm sure he is still trying to figure out things.
Absolutely.
even with John, I think it's a constant learning process. I mean, the man has a lot of experience, and we all rely on that experience. But, again, he, too, is not infallible, and he doesn't know everything, and he'll be the first person to admit that. It's just that base of knowledge he has that the man's always coming up with hunches, and a lot of times they're right, that we go on. But it's funny. Whenever he jumps, that makes us jump because we think, wow, if this got John, what's it going to do to the rest of us?
Yeah, I can imagine. You know, if John jumps, you're like, whoa, something really did happen, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So if that didn't make that.
No doubt. That's
awesome. Now, we're coming down to the last part of the show, so I'm giving you the opportunity to plug, you know, the rest of the season and the upcoming episode that will be on tomorrow, and anything else you would like.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely implore everyone to watch tomorrow at 9 o'clock on Sci-Fi Channel. It's two locations. It's Gettysburg and this very interesting location in West Virginia. If you want to catch up with me, you can do so on Facebook. Just look up Brian J. Cano. On Twitter, I'm also at Brian J. Cano. If you want to come meet me and John, we're going to be at Para History Con in Fort William Henry. That's up in Lake George, New York, April 26th and 27th. You can catch me and Jason Gate at the Las Vegas Paracon, which is obviously in Vegas, and that's August 23rd and 25th. And also a very cool event that's coming up, you can catch me and Jason at, is Parafest at the Sands Bethlehem Event Center, and that's September 6th, 7th, and 8th. A lot of things going on. Definitely a lot more Haunted Collector for everyone to see. There's 7 more episodes coming up. So during the episodes, I know some of the other cast do it as well, but I'm going to be live chatting with everyone on Facebook, Twitter, and GetGlue. So while we're watching the episode, ask questions, and I'll watch it together.
Nice.
Yeah.
It is
Brian. I've talked to him on GetGlue and Twitter during the shows. So, yes, it actually is him responding. I know people have street teams that go out there and be like, oh, yeah, live chat with us during the show. Well, a lot of times it's not the person, but, yes, it is you. I know.
No one would pretend to be me. I'm not cool enough.
Brian, it was such a pleasure to talk to you, and we wish you and the rest of your team on the show the best success, and look forward to seeing the next episode.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on, guys. It was a good time. It flew by.
Yeah, it always does. Well, Brian, you have a great night, and thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys, and I will see you out there.
Yes, you will.
All right.
Because we are.
Night, Brian.
All right, guys. Take care. Bye-bye.
Good night. So, Kevin, speaking of the quantum physics and, you know, everything that has to do with all the science stuff, tomorrow on Full Spectrum, too, I have David Rountree and Tracy Ray again.
Oh,
so,
nice.
Yeah, we're going to dip into that. Yeah, it's that's the one thing of talking to somebody of Brian's level and the tech level of knowledge and research that he's done, and talking to, like, David Rountree and people like that. I don't exactly know all the intelligent questions to ask. I mean, I watch the shows, all the universe and this, and I do definitely understand a lot of, like, for sure I do understand a lot of it, but there's so many questions I want to ask, and I just don't know how.
Yeah, I've interviewed David several times on my show, and we throw out a lot of stuff out there at him and ask him a lot of questions about what he does and the experiments he, you know, and his theories on EVPs and
and other things out there. He'll
blow your mind, I'll tell you. My head always hurts when I've interviewed David. He's such a great guy, and he makes me think too hard.
Yeah, that's the problem. So if anybody listening tonight wants to tune in tomorrow night on Full Spectrum Radio, be prepared to have a bottle of aspirin sitting next to you, a lot of water, maybe some B12, and if need be, a lot of alcohol.
Yeah. Well, and then we also have Tracy Ray, who's a great friend of mine, and her being a psychic, it's also a different side to things. And David's doing a lot of research on psychics and trying to come up with ways of how to prove or disprove whether or not someone that claims to be a psychic actually has gifts or not, you know, because there are people out there that take advantage and really don't have a gift. So, if David could ever come across and make something where it's certified that, you know, you go get tested and you're certified, you know, that would be awesome. But, great. You know, I was going to say, you know, out of all the people that I've interviewed in the last 2 years on the radio, as far as people that have been on shows or currently on shows, Brian knows a lot about the paranormal, you know, and that has nothing to do with being on television. That just goes to show they're not just people thrown on TV, you know, and pretend to be a paranormal investigator. I mean, Brian knows his stuff, right? And he's done it prior to being on this show. And to have that kind of talk with Brian was such a breath of fresh air on, his knowledge and his ideas about the paranormal.
Yeah, and I've been talking to Brian over the since actually the first time that he it was him and Jason Gates, the first time that they were on Full Spectrum when Sarah was still on. So, I mean, it's been a while, and we talk a lot. And yeah, I mean, if something pops up and I have a question, I mean, he's one of my go-to guys when they're not on the road filming, that I'll send him a message or I'll shoot him a text or something, just be like, hey, you know, man, what do you think of this? And go from there. That's the it was him and Jason Gates that were the ones that I initially had talked to about that house in Wisconsin that I talked about, and they said, you know, get in touch with the production company. And it was between the owners and the production company. It had nothing to do with them saying no or anything like that. They just, I mean, permissions have to be had. It's the business. It's the entertainment business. But I had talked to a couple of them and freelance, if they're ever in the area, they're definitely going there just because of what it is. So it's a hell of a far distance for them to travel, as all of us know that we do at our own expense. And it's no different with his team after the season's over, that they're not having their travel expenses paid for. It's everything's out of pocket. I mean, you know, there's no perks when you don't have the network behind you.
Yeah.
So just regular standard investigators, his team that he has locally is phenomenal. They're great. They do amazing things. Same thing with Jason. Even Ben Henson, when he has his events and stuff, that's, you know, a lot of that stuff just comes out of his pocket, or he'll even do try and get sponsors or do a Kickstarter to, you know, get stuff going with that. So it's once the cameras are off, everybody's on the same playing field.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I just wanted to throw a shout out there to Frances that's in our chat room. She's listening all the way from the other side of the globe in England, and it's 3 or 4 a.m. over there. So, Frances, thanks for staying up so freaking late with us and listening to us.
Yeah, thank you. That definitely means a lot. Greetings from across the pond.
Exactly.
And thank you from across the pond.
Yeah, and before we go off air,
next week, we have Lana Starr. They'll be on the show. She's a world champion of women's of wrestling, been in the Lingerie Football League, been in Iron Man, the movie, and several other movies and whatnot. So we're going to talk with her, and Jody will be back with us next week. So that's the show for next Tuesday. And tune in tomorrow. I got a plug for Matt. Tune in tomorrow for Spectrum Radio right here on the Unknown Radio Network, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern time. And they will have David Roundtree and Tracy Ray, so that will be a great show. And I'm still trying to figure out what to play to go out. I guess we could play, if I can find where you put it on the board here, we'll play one of your bands out of the Chicago area to take us out of here, if I can find them.
I'll grab the one that I was like jamming out to all day today.
Sweet.
So yeah, it's a really damn good song. All right, I know it's there. It is. Oh, also, Kevin, for you following Wednesday, I have Dane Ladwig, Mark Potts, and possibly Ray Johnson is going to be joining the conversation too. Between the three of them, they have found out more information about H.H. Holmes that I'm not even going to give you a spoiler alert, but it's never been released at all. They've been approached by Time Magazine and everybody else just through word of mouth of what they found out in the general subject of how much of an exact match through current DNA that they found is the minimal that I was told. I don't know if he was leading me in a different direction or what it was, but that's what was told to me. And that's the following, that's not tomorrow, that's the following Wednesday, that's locked in, and I seriously cannot wait for that show.
Oh, yeah, because I wasn't familiar with H.H. Holmes till I had Jeff Mudgett come on my show, and we talked, and ever since that conversation, I've just been intrigued with the connection between Jack the Ripper and H.H. Holmes. So, yeah, I'll be tuning into that one as well.
Yeah, Jeff Mudge is a dear, dear friend of mine. Mark and I sat down, had pizza with him here in Chicago right after his book came out. We've been working hand in hand ever since with him. So is Dane Ladwig, so is Mark Potts, so is Ray Johnson. All that. This is the whole research team. Even Ursula Bielski is involved with it, and you know, with all the research in it. So yeah, this is. I'm pissed that I can't figure out or can't find out what it is before the show, but I was told no. I talked to Dane on a daily basis. I talked to Jeff all the time. I talked to Mark. I talked to all these guys, and they won't tell me. So we'll hear about that next Wednesday.
Yeah, so. And just so that everybody knows, on Thursdays we have Kevin and Justin have been, different things have been going on in their lives, so they've been doing replays the last 2 weeks. But they should be back live Thursday, Ghost Hunting Texas style. And, of course, our newbie to the family, Chris Taylor, he has Paranormal Access Radio on Friday. So check it out. And I might have another show in the works to put on Saturdays to fill up our entire lineup will work on air 7 days a week.
Sweet. I think we got to call. I think we got to call Chris on Friday.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we give him the Unknown Radio Network hazing. No, I'm just kidding. No, his last show was a great show. So.
Yeah. Exactly. So. Anyways. We're going to get off of here, and thanks to everybody that was listening. And if you're listening in the archives, thank you for listening as well. And we will talk to you again next week.
Yes, and I have Polarizer queued up. Hopefully you like it. If not, sorry.